Well, thank you, and have a good afternoon here. And kind of going, changing gears quite a bit, following the topic with the October blizzard and the weather conditions we're having out there. I'm sure that weed control and pastures and range is probably not really foremost in your thought process right now. But I did kind of want to talk about a few things as far as some of the things we talk about when we discuss some of the weed management, particularly in drought. And at the time that we set this topic up, we were in a big part of the country here, well in the middle of a pretty extensive drought, and we also were going to talk about some of the effects following drought or during that drought recovery period. So it kind of really did work into it. If you look at Dr. Daly's slide about as we went into the summer and started having some drought recovery in a lot of the area that we have. Basically, looking at plants out there and the weeds that we're looking at, and some of those plants that cause us the greatest problem we have are those invasive or introduced weed species that have come into North America from other areas of the world, and most of them in similar climates, particularly in Europe and Asia. The plants that we get over here, of course, are pretty opportunistic. They don't have a lot of the natural predators, and they get over here, and if they can get into a situation, they can really take off. Most of what we have for our grass species and our native plant species that we have in our range are really quite competitive, and one of the biggest things that we talk about, and Roger Gates and I have talked about this, and Leon Reggie, who's our extension weed specialist several years ago at SDSU, always said one of the best weed control programs you can have out there for pasture and range is a good competitive grass stand. But what happens when we get into a stressful situation and those native plants and grasses that we have start getting stressed, then these plants that have been introduced tend to get a little bit ahead of the game and kind of come on board. So plant stresses is what's going to kind of do the biggest disadvantage to a competitive system. And stress is really a lot of different things. The weather, whether we're talking drought or flooding, hail, probably one of the biggest culprits, of course, is overgrazing. Other livestock, other than livestock grazing out there, we have some other factors, prairie dogs and what have you out there, grasshoppers. But all these are stresses that affect that grass stand that we have. In this area, of course, we always seem to be at least in some stage of drought to drought recovery. We're either going into a drought, or in a drought, or we're just coming back out of it. And so this is actually what the drought monitor looked like for South Dakota. This was the 26th of March, and you saw the slide that Dr. Daly had up for the summer. Major, major change. So we definitely were working into a drought recovery. Managing drought, like I said, it's a common occurrence in South Dakota or our neighboring areas here. The stress impacts that are produced out there for these weeds that we have coming in or these introduced plants will vary depending on the type of plant that we have, whether it's a perennial, a biennial, or an annual, and some of the invasive that we have. And we'll touch on some of those as we go through. Drought-tolerant plants. And a lot of the plants that have come over here that's been introduced do have an ability to manage itself against the stressful or drought situations. And one of the biggest characteristics is the leaf structure. And we have some of our native plants also have the ability to handle drought because of that leaf structure. And a lot of that has to do with cuticle thickness, and we'll go into a little bit of that. The big one for introduced plants, particularly perennials, is root depth and root type, and we'll talk about that. Maturity and being able to vary that the maturity of the plant or the growth pattern of the plant over the year, and growth type and going dormant, and we'll all touch on several of those. Well, there's kind of a cutaway of a leaf, and that little top layer as you look up on that leaf structure is that leaf cuticle. And for a plant, that cuticle is really important because that's what gets the ability of the plant to take in its inputs from the outside world into the plant, and in the case of particularly water, being able to keep it within the system when it does get dry. Some plants have a really waxy leaf cuticle, and the picture I've got up there is of a holly plant, which is really a waxy leaf cuticle. But another one that we have out there that's got that really thick cuticle would be like curly cup gumweed. That will actually prevent the movement of water in and out of the plant if it needs to. It can shut those cuticles and openings down and maintain the water in the plant, keep it from escaping and help in a droughty situation, or open up and be able to move water back and forth. The other one is a hairy leaf structure. And things like common mullein have a light hairy surface on that leaf. And that's kind of interesting in that it will also prevent a basic change in the heat and in cooling of the plant and be able to maintain the temperature on that leaf surface easier and prevent movement of water in and out. And it also, we'll touch on it a little bit later on, how that can affect some of the conditions when you're actually going out and spraying. One of the things that some of the plants that we have, and we'll see this in some of our native plants, is when we get really high dry conditions, it will, through a hormonal response, will trigger some of these changes in the leaf structure. A plant that normally doesn't have a waxy surface may actually develop one when we're starting to shut down on the amount of moisture that we're actually getting. And so that it's that plant's response to handling the drought. So, again, that leaf cuticle thickens, and that's a very important mechanism that it uses to do that. So they'll also use this as a drought recovery as well. We start picking up more moisture, then you'll go back to the normal leaf structure and be able to take more moisture into the plant. There's common mullein. We got several states represented here, and I know common mullein is one of those that we're going to find pretty much in every state that we have. It is a biennial. It's on a number of noxious weed lists in states through our area. It's got that light, hairy surface on the leaf, produces the rosette. And in a normal grass year, in a normal situation, it's not very competitive against grass. But if you open it up and we come following a drought or you overgraze, this thing will come in like gangbusters. And one thing to remember about it, that fuzzy leaf on there, if you're going through and actually doing a herbicide treatment, we recommend the use of a non-ionic surfactant just to kind of open that up and try to get that herbicide into the leaf itself and into the plant. Because if you don't, that leaf or that spray droplet will just ball up and roll off the leaf. Kind of one of the interesting things about when we're talking about common mullein, it's a very common all across the world. It's probably it's in the list of the top 100 plants in the world for competitiveness. It's on the list for the top 10 highest seed producers, produces thousands of seeds per plant. It's also on the list for the highest soil seed longevity or viability. And it's been studied in several situations to note that it's anywhere from, you'll see figures from 95 to 105 years. That's several scientists' careers to figure that one out. So you take those two things and put them together, that makes for a pretty competitive plant and a hard one to fight if it gets the edge. You'll see it pretty much in every continent but one in the world, and it's spread throughout a number of different ways as we go through. Growth and maturity. And one of the things that will happen during a drought period for an invasive or a competitive type of weed plant, it's going to go and develop a quicker growth pattern. And it'll go to maturity a lot quicker. The goal of that plant is to mature, produce seed, and get that seed out there as quick as it can before the effects of the drought. So it's going to get that seed production out there as it's is the main objective of what it's going to do. Then it'll go into early maturity or early dormancy and shut down, and the seed germination then on the other end, as soon as we start getting moisture again, it'll trigger it again, and you're going to get the germination of those seeds that are out there, and they may even become more viable sooner than what they normally would. I mentioned roots. In the case of perennials, this is a big one. Perennials have a really deep root system to them. They're able to store a lot of carbohydrates. They're able to store a lot of water. They're able to get down to levels where the water's at, and they can use that as their competitive edge. And a good example of that, and a weed that everybody's familiar with, is Canada thistle. And Canada thistle has that expansive root system where it's going out not only laterally, but it can go down, 10, 15, 20 feet deep is not unusual. If you look at the picture up there, that's a box situation where those plants started from one single plant and over a three-year period developed that massive root structure underneath it. And it's not that hard to do if you stop and think about a Canada thistle patch that gets away and can develop that. That root system, unless you've got a really good competitive stand of grass out there, is going to make it really tough for that grass to compete against that. Western wheatgrass, it can be pretty competitive against it, however. So looking at Canada thistle, that's one of the ones that can recover really quickly following a drought. And during that this drought recovery period, a year ago in South Dakota, our Canada thistle numbers that the South Dakota Weed and Pest Boards, they do estimates every year. And a year ago, our Canada thistle numbers were way down. Been trying to fight a cold here for about the last 3 days, so have to bear with me. But excuse me. But one of the things that comes about with this, that root system really will be able to hold a lot of water and carbohydrates in and really go back to getting into that that dormancy period. Excuse me here. So once it goes through that shutdown period and goes dormant and we get the regeneration period, we're going to have a big jump on that plant. And it gets the edge even over something wet, like our western wheatgrass. seed bank, one of the things that happens that during a drought period, the seeds will remain more viable in the soil for a longer period of time, mainly because of the microorganisms with the drier and lack of moisture. They're not able to work on the natural breakdown of those seeds. So over a droughty period, we're increasing the viability of the seeds that we have out there. So drier conditions are going to prolong that process that we have out there. Excuse me. Leafy spurge. Leafy spurge is kind of unique in that it produces a seed capsule with three seeds within that capsule. And those three seeds that are in there have variations at when they will go ahead and germinate in the soil. So you'll have one seed that will germinate immediately in a normal year. In a dry year, they may hold off, and then there's a seed down in, and one of the third seeds that's in there actually can remain viable in the soil for over 20 years. So the plant's really equipped to handle drought and some of these extreme conditions out there. Again, it's got a real extensive root system as well. One of the unique ones is sickleweed. this is a weed that we have in South Dakota. There's a little bit of it in Nebraska. This is a plant that really responds to drought. If we have a normal year, it'll be more of a short life cycle. We'll act as a biennial, sometimes a short-lived perennial. But if we start having indications of drought, we start having moisture, starts cutting down, this plant can be all done, actually gone through the whole growth cycle, and flower and produce seed by the 1st of July. And pretty unique that way. It breaks off and tumbles, and it will spread that seed out and be ready when the moisture comes about. drought stress, of course, like I said, restricts the translocation, and perennials are one of the biggest culprits of that. And it can hold a lot of water there until that recovery period comes about. One of the other things that happens because of water loss from the plant is that herbicides during a droughty period don't work very well either, for the same reason, that you're unable to get that those herbicides down into the plant. And so translocation doesn't work real well at that point. So it's one of those things that kind of has a double whammy as we're looking at managing in droughty situations. Absinthe wormwood, quite a bit of that in a number of the states around. And one of the things that we've run across with absinthe wormwood, in a normal year, wormwood, a number of our herbicides, if you get it, it's biennial, you catch it in that new growth period, and catch it in the rosette period, it's really pretty easy to control. You get in a droughty period, it's a type of a plant that will harden off fairly quickly and will go through maturity fairly quickly. And this actually was a study that we did with Milestone, and we had sprayed that and actually thought we had it. Timing was good on it. It looked good, but it was an extremely droughty year. It just really didn't look like it was really taking a hold and going. And it's kind of what we had figured, because by fall then, even though we did everything right and had the application done right, rates were right, because of the dry weather, dry conditions, droughty period that summer, we just didn't get good translocation into the plant. It's a perennial, and we started getting that new growth coming in the fall. And to make it even worse, because we missed it then, it was a dry fall, but we started getting moisture a little later on. Then the next following spring, with the seed produced from that plant that we didn't totally kill, we had these kind of new seedlings coming up in that area. And that area that we were really targeting really got away from us again. So kind of one of those things you need to kind of keep track of, in the way some of these weeds will react to that. Herbicide treatments, kind of we talk about four things when you're putting together a herbicide program. For managing herbicide treatments during drought, really kind of four things. One is timing. And like anything else, in a lot of different treatments when you're treating weeds, you want to try to get it as much in the vegetative state as you can. The young plants in the vegetative state are the most vulnerable, and you get your best job done then. Use the high, in a droughty year, use the high end of the recommendation rate and label rates on the products that you're using. And you want to go through, and if it calls for an adjuvant or an additive to the mix, use that. A lot of good adjuvants out there will help in stressful situations to definitely increase the effects of the herbicide in the plant, do a lot better job. And really, the other part of it, and the one we stress the most, is you want to get really good coverage out there to get as much into that plant as you can. Drought in Canada thistle, I mentioned a little bit how tricky that can be. With that, the one thing that we've come across in our work here in South Dakota, the application timing on Canada thistle with these new compounds that are out there that we're looking at, in a lot of the pasture products and the noxious weed programs that we're looking at, these new products are different from what we used to talk with the 2,4-D and the Banvil and those type of things. When we used to say, you know, try to catch Canada thistle in that pre-bud stage, if we got a good spring and we can go and do a fall application, we got moisture, try to do it then. But because of the residual effect of some of these new things we have out, like Milestone and a number of the premixes that are being marketed out there, we can actually hit in a number of different stages a growth with Canada thistle throughout the year. And with the residual effect, we can still maintain up in the high 80s and 90s percent control that next year. And in a lot of cases, we can see good control into year two as well. So we can even follow when once that plant starts fuzzing out there. We don't recommend that because we'd like to have that taken care of before the seed starts fuzzing out. But if we get into a situation, we can actually get that herbicide out there and do that. The one thing that we've really been looking a lot at is going out in August and September and getting a lot of that Canada thistle work done at that time when we're kind of in between some of the other jobs out there and can get some of those treatments done in and getting good results with that. The main thing that we want to do with Canada thistle is we want to try to keep that from producing that root system and producing any seed. And, of course, the first year you're usually not going to get a lot of seed out of that plant as a seedling. You may get some coming off of shoots. But that seedling really needs to be pretty vulnerable because the seedling we have back here, that's May 16th. Now, that's from a seed. October 24th, that's that same seedling. And it's already started its perennial root system. It's got its lateral roots. It's got buds coming off of that. We got shoots coming off of that. And if you're just kind of curious, that single seedling then had 41 root buds coming off and shoots coming off that single plant. So any idea why Canada thistle can explode on you pretty fast? And that's why we kind of really talk. You really need to take after that one fairly quickly. Biennial thistles are a little easier. 2-year life cycle on them. And really the key to those, even in a droughty year, you want to get that rosette. And by eliminating that rosette, you're going to prevent just about an entire year's growth and a lot of the seed production for that plant because it's only going to reproduce off of seed. If you do miss that and it starts to go to bolt, there's some combination things you can use that out there to cut that down. But if you can target that rosette and get that eliminated, you've really done a big number on the biennial thistles that we have out there. Just kind of an interesting one. I know a lot of people battle curly cup gumweed. It is a native. Normally, grasses are really pretty competitive against it, but boy, this is one you don't have to overgraze too much and get a response from gumweed on this. Gumweed's really easy to control, although it's one of the ones that we get calls on every year, probably more than any other weed. And the time of the year I get most of the calls on curly cup gumweed would be about tail end of July, first part of August, and the pasture's yellow, and they want to know, what can I do with my gumweed? And I usually tell them, you know, right now, for an effective control, if you want to clip it, try to keep it from going to seed, but you're pretty limited to what you're going to do because their next question is, well, I kind of like to fall spray it, and fall spraying really doesn't work with gumweed. The easy answer to the question is, though, gumweed is really responsive early in the season, and this is a study that we did, and if you look at that top picture, that's a picture of the check. The rating was taken in September in the plot that we had up there. Didn't have any treatment. The picture below that had a 2-point rate of Grazon P&D on it, and that is the September rating on that one, on an application that was made in June 21st. And we usually talk about, in South Dakota, controlling gumweed the second week of June, and it was just about 100% control on that. The other one was another treatment where it was close to, it was in the high 90s, was a 2,4-D ester, 2 quarts to the acre. Again, June 21st was when that was applied and rated in September. And just to show you how quick you can get to be too late with that, The picture below that is a 2,4-D ester 2-quart application, just like the one above it, but that was applied July 25th, and it looks just like the check. And so timing is extremely critical on this, and that's the case with a number of these, even in situations where it would be a little droughty. Native plants, and just kind of a little bit, one thing to keep in mind, this year I had a lot of discussion on plants that were showing up in range and pasture, and were worried about it, and it ranged from gumweed. We had sage. There's a number of sagewarts, a number of different native species out there, and even Flodman's thistle is one that I just say, don't worry about it this year. I wouldn't spend the money to go out and do anything with it. Once we get past this drought recovery period, the grasses will come back, and these native plants, and it'll go back to the normal populations that they have. But there are some good things about that, and there's a number of those good plants out there, so I don't like to just randomly go out and do a number of different spraying, but we need to kind of look at that. And the one advantage, and it'll probably come up a little later, but I want to mention it here, those weeds are also a feed source, and they've got a value a nutritive value for livestock out there that we can utilize, particularly in a drought recovery period, and the livestock can utilize those plants as those are some of the first plants to come up and allow the grass time to recover during that drought recovery period. One of the weeds we got coming into pasture and range real heavy here is yellow toad flax, and we really have to watch that because the cattle will utilize that as well. And yellow toad flax has a unique thing about the seed structure on that. It has variation in the maturity of the seed. So that long seed head will have seeds that are completely viable, and the seeds are just starting to bloom. And livestock like those newly bloomed flowers on those seed heads, and they'll eat them. And I always kind of equate this to the old in-gate seeder guys used to plant oats. That cow or bull out there actually is a pretty good planting unit. It's got everything you need there. You've got the distribution system there. You've got a nutrient system with the manure. You've got water. You can move it from one pasture to another. What an excellent planting mechanism. And that's one of the ways that weed is kind of moving around the state. So you need to be aware of that, particularly, again, in some of those droughty periods. I'll just finish up with the poisonous plants, because where the native plants, in a lot of cases the good ones, maybe some of the first plants up in a recovery period, so are some of the poisonous plants. And livestock, in a normal situation, the poisonous plants are usually unpalatable enough, but coming out of a drought, it might be set up enough to where they will actually take some of these poisonous plants where they're some of the first ones out there. So good scouting, so you know what's out there. Kind of look those pastures over, and so you can see what you have out there and know if there's some poisonous plants out there that's going to prevent some problems later on. So basically, just kind of some of the things that we talked about. I'll just end up. One of the best things you can do, of course, is utilize a good integrated method out there, and there's a number of different cultural and chemical and biological controls of these weeds. But again, we'll just go right back to the best management program you can have out there is just to maintain a good, healthy grass stand out there is going to be the best thing that you can do. So with that, thank you.